Filippo Grandi, Commissioner General of the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees, also known as UNRWA. Welcome. UNRWA deals with 1.4 million Palestinian refugees living in 58 camps across Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, Gaza, the West Bank, and East Jerusalem, and has been providing services to them since 1950. A Palestinian refugee in the Baqa camp in Jordan recently said UNRWA is our homeland. We are in a moment when the Middle East is witnessing great change. We see revolutions of expectations. Can you describe the atmosphere in the camps in the occupied territories? How have the revolutions affected people's attitudes in the camps, given the occupation, the lack of progress in the peace process, and their own desire for change?
Frustration is perhaps the best description of what the Palestinian refugees feel in the present circumstances in the Middle East. With the Arab Spring having introduced an element of dynamism that is quite unprecedented in the region, having given people, as I always say, a license to speak, having created a space which is quite extraordinary for people to express their aspirations. This is not confined to the places where the Arab Spring has developed into a movement, into changes, into sometimes problematic situations, but it has had a powerful effect through the global media on all Arabs, I think, on all people in the region, in fact, including the Palestinian refugees, who, by the way, are almost 5 million, because the mandate of UNRWA is not only over those that still live in the so-called camps, which are by now, by and large, suburbs of cities, but also those outside. All Palestinian registered as refugees with UNRWA, numbering now nearly 5 million, not yet 5 million, have a right to have access to our services. And whilst, yes, they have said, and I was there when that refugee in Baqa camp said, UNRWA is our homeland, this is a sad reflection of the reality that they do not have a homeland, a real homeland. An agency cannot be a homeland. And the contrast between this dynamic situation in the region and the complete stagnation of the peace process in particular, and within the peace process, of discussions on solving in a just and sustainable manner the refugee question. This contrast generates enormous frustration, which in a constituency of almost 5 million people in a very volatile region, perhaps the most volatile region in the world, in my opinion, is a risk.
You mentioned the license to speak in the occupied territories. What's the situation like in the camps in Jordan and Syria?
Well, first of all, again, not just in the camps, you know, there's always a sense that refugees are all in the camps. In fact, most refugees are outside the camps. But no matter where, the frustration is everywhere. Of course, circumstances are very different from country to country. In Lebanon, refugees have always been very much excluded from rights and have always lived in difficult circumstances. In Syria and Jordan, refugees have had much greater access to jobs, to decent living conditions, to freedom of movement. So the situation has always been much better for Palestinian refugees in the stable Jordan and stable Syria. Lately, of course, in Syria, the situation has become more problematic. As I always say, refugees have not been targeted, but they have at times been caught in the general unrest of the country and have suffered some consequences from that, and we have always raised these matters with the government of Syria. In Jordan, at the moment, the situation is probably the most stable of the countries that host the refugees. And this is where, in fact, we can make more progress in carrying out our program of education, of health, and so forth. But in Jordan also there is a certain tension arising from the regional tensions. The people of Jordan, including the Palestinians, who are a very large group in Jordan, have been asking for reform, His Majesty the King and his government have started moving along this path, and it is important that they continue to move, including addressing some of the demands of the Palestinian population, because that way that precious stability of the Kingdom of Jordan will be preserved, and that at least will continue to be a very safe haven, so to speak, for the refugees.
We've talked about Syria and Jordan. Bearing in mind the recent change of government in Egypt, what does the humanitarian situation in Gaza look like today?
Well, the situation in Gaza is first and foremost affected by the Israeli blockade. The blockade was imposed in 2007, in its most harsh form, as you know, following the takeover by Hamas. And the blockade, which is illegal according to international law, has caused many problems to the Gaza Strip in terms of deterioration of the economic conditions, of infrastructure, of services, of the ability of people to export, import, move, and so forth. Since 2010, the blockade has been considerably eased, and we must recognize this. It's a very important gesture on the part of the Israeli government, which has allowed agencies like UNRWA, UNDP, and others to carry out reconstruction projects. Previously, impossible, because one of the main features of the blockade was the inability for anybody to import building materials through the legal crossings between Israel and Gaza. Now, the situation there has improved. And as I have been saying to the Israeli authorities, we need to improve further. We need to make these procedures for importing materials much more flexible. And we're talking to them about that. And we need to make exports also possible again. At the moment, the Palestinians in Gaza cannot export their produce to either Israel or the West Bank. They can export further, but their natural markets are Israel and the West Bank. And this has to be restored, because I say this, although that's not strictly speaking part of my mandate, but I say this because why are people poor? Because they cannot, because economic activities, legal economic activities, cannot restart. And that's why we have to provide humanitarian assistance. We would have to provide less if this was possible. And in respect of Egypt, Egypt has one key responsibility in the system governing access and movement with Gaza, which is the passengers crossing in Rafah. And there also, after the change of government, improvements have been made. But there also, I think that further progress could be should be allowed, and we have passed this message to the Egyptian authorities, who are otherwise very cooperative. And I think that also perhaps Egypt could start considering some passage of goods through Gaza, through Rafah into Gaza, although I do fully appreciate that the primary responsibility for this lies with the Israeli authorities. You know, the situation continues to be very difficult. As I always say, the economy in Gaza is driven by other subsidies, international aid, like salaries through the Palestinian authorities, which are by and large covered by international contribution, or through UNRWA, or through the illegal tunnels. But that's not a healthy economy. That's not an economy that will sustain a stable situation. Therefore, even for the sake of stability of Israel and Egypt and the region, and of course for the welfare of the and the rights of the Palestinians living there, it is important that the blockade be eventually lifted, and that meanwhile this easing progresses significantly towards better and easier procedures.
I'm glad you brought up the issue of economic distress and the need for a healthy economy. Youth unemployment in the West Bank and Gaza is over 50% right now. Do you think we will see the growth of a youth movement, be it a non-violent one or an intifada? What can we expect?
Well, the young people are always the worst hit by hardship, not only in their prospect, not only in their current circumstances, unemployment being really a very tragic symptom of this situation, not only in their prospects for better lives economically, from the point of view of education and so forth, but also in terms of their hopes, aspiration, in their attitude to life. You frustrate youth, you generate youth that is aggressive. And I think that this is one of the greatest risks of the situation in Palestine and among refugees in general. That's why we were particularly concerned by the young refugees, who are the large majority of the refugees. We will, anecdotally, in the spring, in March, we are planning together with the European Union to organize an event in Brussels to showcase what we do for young refugees and to also highlight their plight, because we think that this is a strong message coming out of the Arab Spring. Young people matter, and they want to matter, and they want their voice to be heard. I think it's those in Gaza in particular, but also in many places of the West Bank, suffer greatly from the situation, and it is important to address their plight, because of course the risks are very great. I hope that they will know that the evolution of the situation will not lead them towards violence. But of course, if their problems and the problems of all Palestinians are not addressed, there are very great risk that they will take that path, and that will be bad for the stability of the entire region.
In the past, you've talked about aid dependency and the sense of hopelessness and despair it feeds into. How are you tackling this issue?
Well, like I said, UNRWA provides aid in different forms, you know, in Gaza in particular, but also in the West Bank. We do run our regular programs, which is really education, health, and through education you can do a lot to address some of these problems. We also have a microfinance program and other programs, vocational training and other programs that try to provide opportunities to people, even in the limited circumstances of the occupied territory. But in the end, it's other factors that have to be put in place, other elements of peace and stability that have put in place, not by us. And by the way, you asked me earlier also about the demands of youth. You know, when the Arab Spring started, one of the key demands of the Palestinian people, especially the young people, was for their leadership to reconcile. I think this is a very important message that comes from them. And I can only support that message, because it is important that the Palestinians, especially in their difficult political circumstances, have a unified leadership and become an interlocutor externally, but also internally for their own people.
I'm glad you touch upon this very important issue, which has been in the news. For our final question, I want to bring up another item in the news, the Palestinian bid for statehood and for membership at the UN. How has this affected the refugee issue?
Well, first of all, let me tell you, of course, I can only here second what the Secretary General has said many times. The aspiration to a state is a very legitimate aspiration of the Palestinians. How they get there is not really for the head of a humanitarian agency to say. All I can say here is that we have to be very careful. Statehood, as it is currently pursued through United Nations institutions, will not per se address the issue of refugees in a resolutive manner. That can only be solved by dialogue between the parties and an agreement that provides for a solution, finally, after more than six decades, to the plight of refugees. A solution, however, that has to be, first of all, just, in accordance with UN resolutions, many that have been focusing on this issue, and that can only be durable, in our opinion, if refugees are involved in this discussion or their representatives. And this has not been the case so far, and this is something that we're advocating very strongly. And this will not be addressed by the statehood process per se.
Filippo Grandi, thank you very much.
Thank you.